Njal Saga, Part 44. People rode home from the Thing. When Gunnar came home, he spoke to Sigmund. "You're a man of more bad luck than I thought, and you make evil use of your abilities. But still, I've made a settlement for you, and you must never rise to Hallgerd's bait again. You're not at all like me. You are given to mockery and sarcasm, while I am not. You get along well with Hallgerd because you have more in common with her." Gunnar reproached him at length, and Sigmund took it well and said that from then on he would follow his advice more than he had in the past. Gunnar said that it would serve him well. The settlement held firm for a while, and Gunnar and Njal's sons were on friendly terms, but the rest of their people had little to do with each other. It happened one day that some itinerant women came to Hodur and Dýflumburg Thorsfjall. They were talkative and rather malicious. Hallgerd had a women's room in which she often sat, and her daughter Thorgerd and Thrain were there, as well as Sigmund and a number of women. Gunnar was not there, nor was Kolskegg. The itinerant women went into the room. Hallgerd greeted them and found seats for them and asked them for the news, but they said they had none to report. Hallgerd asked where they had been that night, and they said they had been at Burg Thorsfjall. "What was Njal up to?" she said. "He was working hard at sitting," they said. "What were Njal's sons doing?" she said. "They think of themselves as real men. They're pretty big to look at, but they are quite untested," they said. "Skarphedin was sharpening his axe, Grim was fixing a shaft to his spearhead, Helgi was riveting the hilt on his sword, and Hasgold was fastening the handle on his shield." "They must be getting ready for something big," said Hallgerd. "We don't know about that," they said. "What were Njal's servants doing?" said Hallgerd's. "We don't know what all of them were doing," they said, "but one was carting shit to the hillocks." "What's the point of that?" said Hallgerd. "He said this would make the hay there better than anywhere else," they said. "Njal's wisdom is uneven," said Hallgerd, "although he has advice on everything." "What do you mean?" they said. "I'll point to what's true," said Hallgerd. "He didn't cart dung to his beard so that he would be like other men. Let's call him Old Beardless and his sons Dung Beardlings, and you, Sigmund, make up a poem about this and give us the benefit of your being a poet." Sigmund said he was up to this and came up with 3 or 4 verses, all of them malicious. "You're a treasure," said Hallgerd, "the way you do just what I want." At that moment, Gunnar came in. He had been standing outside the room and heard all the words that had passed. They were shocked when they saw him come in. They fell silent, but before there had been loud laughter. Gunnar was very angry and said to Sigmund, "You are foolish and unable to follow good advice if you are willing to slander Njal's sons, and even worse, Njal himself, on top of what you have already done to them, and this will lead to your death. And if any man here repeats these words, he'll be sent away and bear my anger besides." They were so terrified by him that no one dared to repeat the words. After that, he left. The itinerant women talked among themselves about how they would get a reward from Burg Thora if they told her what had been said. They went down to Burg Thorsfjall and told her, in private and without being asked. Burg Thora spoke to the men while they were at the table. "Gifts have been given to you all, father and sons, and you're not real men unless you repay them." "What gifts are these?" said Skarphedin. "You, my sons, have all received the same gift. You have been called Dung Beardlings, and my husband has been called Old Beardless." "We're not made like women that we become furious over everything," said Skarphedin. "But Gunnar became furious on your behalf," she said, "and he is said to be gentle. If you don't avenge this, you'll never avenge any shame." "The old lady enjoys all this," said Skarphedin, and grinned, but sweat formed on his brow and red spots on his cheeks, and this was unusual for him. Grim was silent and bit his lip. Helgi showed no change. Hasgold went out with Burg Thora. She came in again and went on raging. Njal spoke. "Everything works itself out, woman, though it may take time. And it happens in many cases where men's tempers have been tried that the effect is two-sided, even after vengeance has been taken." That night, when Njal had gone to bed, he heard an axe strike the wall of his bed closet and make a loud ringing noise. There was another bed closet where the shields were hung up, and he saw that the shields were gone. He said, "Who's taken down our shields?" "Your sons have gone out with them," said Burg Thora. He pulled his shoes on his feet and went out at once and around to the other side of the house and saw that they were heading up the slope. He said, "Where are you going, Skarphedin?" "To look for your sheep," he said. Njal said, "You wouldn't be armed if you planned that, so it must be something else." "We're going salmon fishing, father, if we don't find the sheep," he said. If that's so, then it would be a good thing if the prey didn't slip away, said Njal. They went on their way, and Njal went to bed. He said to Bergthora, Your sons were outside, all of them, with weapons, and you must have egged them on to something. I will give them all my thanks if they tell me of the slaying of Sigmund, said Bergthora. Njal's Saga, Part 45. To return to Njal's sons, they went up to Fljotslid and stayed there that night, and when the morning broke, they were closer to Hlidrendi. That same morning, Sigmund and Skjold got up and planned to go out to the breeding horses. They took bridles with them and caught horses in the hayfield and rode away. They looked for the stallion on the slope and found him between two brooks and brought the horses a good way down toward the road. Skarphedin saw them because Sigmund was in colored clothing. He spoke, Do you see that red elf? They looked and said they could see him. Skarphedin said, You must have nothing to do with this, Hoskuld, for you will often be sent out alone and unprepared. I've marked Sigmund for myself, that's a man's job, and Grim and Helgi are to take on Skjold. Hoskuld sat down, and they went on until they met up with them. Skarphedin spoke to Sigmund. Take your weapons and defend yourself. You'll need that more than you need to make lampoons about us. Sigmund took his weapons, and Skarphedin waited for him. Skjold turned to face Grim and Helgi, and they fought violently. Sigmund had a helmet on his head, and a shield and a sword at his belt, and a spear in his hand. He turned to face Skarphedin and thrust at him with his spear, and it struck the shield. Skarphedin cut through the spear shaft with his axe and raised his axe again and swung at Sigmund, and it struck the shield and split it down to below the handle. Sigmund drew his sword with his right hand and struck at Skarphedin, but the sword hit the shield and stuck fast there. Skarphedin twisted the shield so quickly that Sigmund lost his grip on his sword. Then Skarphedin swung at Sigmund with his axe. Sigmund was wearing a corselet. The axe came down on his shoulder. Skarphedin cut through the shoulder blade and pulled the axe toward himself so that Sigmund fell on both knees, but sprang up at once. You bowed to me just now, said Skarphedin, and you'll be on your back before we're through. That's bad, said Sigmund. Skarphedin struck him on the helmet and then dealt the death blow. Grim swung at Skjold's legs and took it off at the ankle, and Helgi pierced him with the sword, and then he met his death. Skarphedin saw one of Hallgod's shepherds. He had by this time cut off Sigmund's head. He placed it in the man's hands and told him to take it to Hallgod and said that she would know whether this head had uttered slander about them. The shepherd threw the head down as soon as they had left. He did not dare to do so while they were still there. The brothers went on until they met some men at the Marker Fljot and told them what had happened. Skarphedin announced that he had slain Sigmund, and Grim and Helgi that they had slain Skjold. Then they went home and told Njal what had happened. He said, Bless your hands. This time there will be no self-judgment, not for the time being. To return to the shepherd, he came back to Hlidrendi and told Hallgerd the news. Skarphedin handed me Sigmund's head and told me to bring it to you, but I didn't dare, he said, because I didn't know how you would take it. It's too bad you didn't bring it, she said. I would have brought it to Gunnar, and then he would have had to avenge his kinsmen or else be blamed by all men. After that, she went to Gunnar and said, I must tell you of the slaying of your kinsman Sigmund. Skarphedin killed him and wanted his head brought to me. Sigmund should have expected this, said Gunnar, for evil designs have evil results, and you and Skarphedin have often behaved spitefully to each other. Gunnar then went away. He did not have any action brought for the slaying, and in fact did nothing at all about it. Hallgerd often reminded him that no compensation had been paid for Sigmund, but Gunnar paid no attention to her prodding. Three things passed, at each of which people expected that he would prosecute the case. Then a problem arose which Gunnar did not know how to handle, and he rode over to see Njal. Njal received him warmly. Gunnar said, I have come to seek your advice about a problem. You deserve it, said Njal, and gave him advice on what to do. Gunnar then stood up and thanked him. Njal took him by the arm and said to him, Your kinsman Sigmund has been without compensation for quite a long time. He was compensated long ago, said Gunnar, but I would not reject an honorable offer. Gunnar had never spoken ill of Njal's sons. Njal wanted nothing else but that Gunnar should set the amount. Gunnar set it at 200 ounces of silver, and he allowed no compensation for Skjold. They paid the entire amount at once. Gunnar announced the settlement at the Thingskalar Assembly at a time when it was most crowded, and he talked about how well Njal and his sons had acted, and about the malicious words which led Sigmund to his death. No one was to ever bring up these words again, and if anyone did, he would be without the right to compensation. The two of them, Gunnar and Jarl, said that no matter would ever arise that they would not settle by themselves. They stood by this and always remained friends. Njal's Saga, Part 46. There was a man named Gizr. He was the son of Teit, the son of Kettlebjorn the Old from Mosfell. Gizr's mother was Olaf, the daughter of the Hersir Bodvar, the son of Viking Kari. Gizr's son was Islief the Bishop. Teit's mother was Helga, the daughter of Thord Beard, the son of Harap, the son of Bjorn Buna. Gizr the White lived at Mosfell and was a great chieftain. A man named Gir is now brought into the saga. He was called Gir the Godi. His mother was Thorkatla, the daughter of Kettlebjorn the Old from Mosfell. Gir lived at Hlid. He and Gizr supported each other in all matters. In those days, Mord Valgardsson lived at Hof in the Rangarvellir. He was cunning and malicious. His father, Valgard, was abroad at the time, and his mother had died. He was very envious of Gunnar and of Hlidarendi. He was well off for property, but not well liked. Part 47. There was a man named Otkol, the son of Skarf, the son of Halkol, who fought with Grim of Grimsness and killed him in a duel. Halkol and Kettlebjorn the Old were brothers. Otkol lived at Kirkjubeyr. His wife was Thorgerd, the daughter of Mar, the son of Brondolf, the son of Nadad the Faroese. Otkol was well off for property. He had a son named Thorgeir. He was still young, but quite promising. There was a man named Skamel. He lived at the other farm called Hof and had a lot of property. He was malicious and untruthful, overbearing and vicious to deal with. He was a friend of Otkol's. Halkol was the name of Otkol's brother. He was big and strong and lived at Kirkjubeyr with Otkol. They had another brother named Hallbjorn the White. He brought a slave named Melkolf out to Iceland. Melkolf was Irish and quite unlikable. Hallbjorn went to stay with Otkol. Melkolf came along with him and often said that he would be happy if Otkol were his master. Otkol was kind to him and gave him a knife and a belt and a full set of clothes, and the slave did whatever he wanted him to. Otkol asked his brother to sell him the slave. Hallbjorn said he would give him to him, but also said that Melkolf was less of a prize than Otkol thought. Once Otkol owned the slave, his work got worse and worse. Otkol often talked with Hallbjorn the White about how little work the slave seemed to be doing. Hallbjorn said that he had even worse qualities. In those days, there was a great famine, so that people lacked both hay and food, and this spread all over parts of Iceland. Gunnar shared hay and food with many people, and everybody who turned to him got supplies, as long as there were any. At last, Gunnar ran short of hay and food. He asked Kolskegg to go with him on a journey, along with Thrain Sigfusson and Lambi Sigurdarson. They went to Kirkjubeyr and called Otkol out. He greeted them. Gunnar responded politely. "Things are such," said Gunnar, "that I have come to buy hay and food from you, if there is any." "I have both," said Otkol, "but I'll sell you neither one." "Are you willing to give it to me, then?" said Gunnar, "and take your chances on me repaying you?" "I won't do that either," said Otkol. Skamel was advising him to act meanly. Thrain Sigfusson said, "It would be fitting if we just took it and left behind what it was worth." "The men of Mosfell would all have to be dead," said Skamel, "before you sons of Sigfus could rob them." "I will not do any robbing," said Gunnar. "Would you like to buy a slave for me?" said Otkol. "I won't refuse that," said Gunnar. He then bought Melkolf and went off, leaving things that way. Njal found out about this and said, "This was badly done, refusing to sell to Gunnar. There is no hope for others if men like him cannot get supplies." "Why do you need to say much about it?" said Bergthora. "It would be much more noble to share our food and hay with him, since you're not short of either." Njal said, "That's as true as day. I'll give him some supplies." He went up to the farm at Thorolfsfell with his sons, and they loaded 15 horses with hay and another 5 with food. Njal came to Hlidarendi and called Gunnar out. Gunnar greeted them warmly. Njal said, "Here is hay and food which I want to give you. I don't want you ever to turn to anyone but me when you're in need." "Your gifts are good," said Gunnar, "but of greater worth to me is the friendship with you and your sons." Njal then went back home. The spring wore on. Part 48. Gunnar rode to the Thing that summer. A great number of men from Sida in the east had been staying at his farm, and he invited them to stay again when they rode home from the Thing. They said that they would, and they rode off to the thing. Njal was there, too, with his sons. The thing was a quiet one. Now to tell of Hallgerd, back at Hlidarendi. She spoke to the slave Milkhoff and said, "I've thought of a task for you. You've got to go to Kirkjubeur." "What should I do there?" he said. "You're to steal food from them, enough butter and cheese for 2 horses to carry. Then set fire to the storage shed, and they'll all think it was carelessness, and no one will suspect that anything was stolen." The slave said, "I've been bad, but I've never been a thief." "Listen to you," she said. "You make yourself out to be so good, when you've been not only a thief, but a murderer. Don't you dare refuse this errand, or I'll have you killed." He was quite sure that she would do this if he did not go. That night, he took 2 horses and put pack saddle pads on them and went to Kirkjubeur. The dog knew him and did not bark, but instead ran up to him and fawned on him. He went to the storage shed and opened it and loaded the 2 horses with food and then sent fire to the shed and killed the dog. He returned along the Ranga River. There, his shoestring broke and he took his knife and repaired it, but left his knife and belt lying there. He went all the way to Hlidarendi and then noticed that the knife was missing, but did not dare go back. He turned the food over to Hallgerd. She was pleased. Next morning, when the people at Kirkjubeur came outdoors, they saw the great damage. A man was sent to the thing to tell Otkell, for that was where he was. He took it quite calmly and said that the cause was that the storage shed was attached to the kitchen, and then everybody thought that this was what happened. People rode home from the thing, and many rode to Hlidarendi. Hallgerd brought food to the table, including cheese and butter. Gunnar knew that such food was not to be had, and asked Hallgerd where it had come from. "From such a place that you can well enjoy eating it," she said. "And besides, it's not for men to busy themselves with preparing food." Gunnar got angry and said, "It's a bad thing if I'm a partner to a thief," and he slapped her on the face. Hallgerd said she would remember this slap and pay it back if she could. She went out and he went with her, and everything was taken off the table and meat brought in instead, and they all guessed that this was because the meat had come in an honest way. Then the travelers from the thing went on their way. Njal's Saga, Part 49. To turn now to Skamel. He was riding along the Ranga River looking for sheep and saw something shiny on the path and got off his horse and picked it up. It was a knife and belt, and he thought he knew both of them and took them to Kirkjubeur. Otkell was outside and greeted him warmly. Skamel said, "Do you perhaps recognize these things?" "I certainly do," said Otkell. "Whose are they?" said Skamel. "The slave Melkoff," said Otkell. "More than the two of us must see them," said Skamel. "I'll give you trustworthy counsel." They showed them to many people, and everyone recognized them. Then Skamel said, "What do you intend to do now?" Otkell answered, "We must go to Mord Valgardsson and bring it up with him." They went to Hof and showed Mord the things and asked if he recognized them. Mord said that he did. "But what about it? Do you think anything of yours is to be found at Hlidarendi?" "It's hard for us to deal with this," said Skamel, "when such mighty men are involved." "That's true," said Mord, "but I know some things about Gunnar's household that neither of you knows." "We'll give you money," they said, "if you'll take over this matter." Mord said, "That money will be hard earned, but it may be that I'll look into this." They gave him 3 marks of silver so that he would give them his help. Footnote. It's supposedly illegal to pay people for legal help. That it supposedly is against the law. You're supposed to be able to get the help for free. So this is indicates that Mord is a scam artist, basically. They gave him 3 marks of silver so that he would give them his help. He made this plan, that women should go traveling around with little items to give to housewives, and see what they were given in return. Because people tend to get rid of stolen property first, if they have any, and that will be the case here if this was somebody's doing. The women must then show me what they were given at each place, and I'll have nothing more to do with the matter once the truth is known. They agreed on this, and Skamel and Otkell went home. Mord sent women around the district, and they were gone for 30 days. Then they came back with much to carry. Mord asked where they had been given the most. They said that they had been given the most at Hlidarendi, and that Hallgerd had been very generous with them. He asked what they had been given. They said that they had been given cheese. He asked to see it. They showed it to him, and there were many slices. He took them and kept them. Soon after this, he went to see Atko. He asked him to bring out Thorgerd's cheese mold, and he did so. Mord placed the slices into it, and they matched the mold in every detail. They saw, too, that the women had been given a whole cheese. Mord said, "Now you see that Hallgrid must have stolen the cheese." They brought together all the evidence. Mord declared that he would have nothing more to do with the matter, and with that they parted. Kolskegg had a talk with Gunnar and said, "I have bad news. Everybody is saying that Hallgrid stole the cheese and caused great damage at Kirkjubeer." Gunnar said that this was probably true, but what should we do about it? Kolskegg said, "You're the one who has to make amends for your wife, and it seems best to me that you go to Atkal and make him a good offer." "That's well said," said Gunnar. "I'll do that." Soon after this, Gunnar sent for Thrain Sigfusson and Lambi Sigurdarson, and they came at once. Gunnar told them where he was planning to go. They were pleased with that. They rode off to Kirkjubeer, 12 in all, and called to Atkal to come out. Skamel was there with Atkal and said, "I'll go out with you. It's better to have the brains along. I want to be at your side when you most need help, as you will now. I think the best plan is for you to act with authority." They went out then, Atko and Skamel and Halko and Halbjorn. They greeted Gunnar, and he responded politely. Atko asked where he was heading. "No farther than here," said Gunnar, "and my purpose is to say, with regard to the great and terrible damage which took place here, that it was the work of my wife and the slave I bought from you." "This was to be expected," said Halbjorn. Gunnar said, "I want to make you a good offer, and I propose that the best men in this district decide the amount." Skamel said, "The offer sounds good, but it's unfair. You have many friends among the farmers here, and Atkal does not have many friends." "Then I will offer," said Gunnar, "to fix the amount myself and announce it right away, and in addition promise you my friendship and pay it all at once. I will pay you double the amount of your loss." Skamel said, "Don't accept this. It would be naive to grant him self-judgment when you should be the one to judge." Atkal said, "I will not grant you self-judgment, Gunnar." Gunnar spoke, "I sense here the advice of others, who will have their reward some day, but make the judgment yourself." Atkal leaned toward Skamel and said, "What shall I say now?" Skamel said, "Say that this is a good offer, and refer the matter to Gizer the White and Gir the Goaty. Many people will then say that you are like your grandfather Halkul, who was a great hero." Atkal said, "This is a good offer, Gunnar, but I want you to give me time to see Gizer the White and Gir the Goaty." Gunnar said, "Do as you wish, but some men will say that you cannot see where your honor lies if you turn down the choices I have offered." Gunnar then rode home. When he was gone, Halbjorn spoke, "Here I see how different men can be. Gunnar made you good offers, and you were not willing to take any of them. What do you think we will gain by carrying on a quarrel with Gunnar when no one is his equal? But still, he has such integrity that the offers will stand even if you accept them later. I think your best plan is to go and see Gizer the White and Gir the Goaty at once." Atkal had his horse brought and made everything ready. He was not keen-sighted. Skamel walked some of the way with Atkal. He said to him, "I find it strange that your brother didn't want to do this for you. I'll offer to go in your place, because I know that you find it hard to travel." "I accept your offer," said Atkal, "but you must tell things exactly as they are." "I'll do that," said Skamel. Then he took Atkal's horse and traveling cloak, and Atkal went back home. Halbjorn was outside and spoke to Atkal. "It's bad to have a scoundrel for a best friend, and we will always be sorry that you turned back. It's not a clever move to send the worst of liars on an errand on which, it may be said, men's lives depend." "You'd be terrified if Gunnar raised his halberd," said Atkal, "since you're this way now." "I don't know who would be the most terrified then," said Halbjorn, "but someday you will say that Gunnar is not slow to aim his halberd once he is angry." Atkal said, "All of you are running scared, except Skamel." Both of them were angry. Part 50. Skamel came to Mosfell and reported all the offers to Gizer. "It seems to me," said Gizer, "that these are very good offers. Why didn't Atkal accept them?" "His main reason," said Skamel, "was that everybody wanted you to have the honor, and so he waits for your decision. This will be best for all." Skamel stayed there overnight. Gizer sent a man to Gir the Goaty, and he came down from Hlid early the next morning. Gizer told him the story. "And now what do you think should be done?" "Just what you have already decided," said Gir, "to settle things in the way that is best for all. Let's have Scammell tell the story once more and see how he reports it this time. They did this. Geezer said, "You seem to have told the story correctly, and yet I can see you are a most wicked man. Looks are no mark of character if you turn out well." Scammell went back and rode first to Kirky Bear and called Otkel outside. Otkel welcomed him warmly. Scammell gave him greetings from Geezer and Gear. "There is no need to talk quietly about this case. It is the will of both Gear the Goaty and Geezer that you make no settlement in this matter. The advice they give is to go and serve a summons on Gunnar for receiving stolen goods and on Hallgerd for theft." Otkel said, "Then we'll do exactly as they advise." "They thought it especially good," said Scammell, "that you acted with such authority, and I made you out to be a great man in every way." Otkel told his brothers about this. Hallbjorn said, "This must be a huge lie." Time passed until the final summons day for the Althing. Otkel called on his brothers and Scammell to ride along to Hlidarendi to make the summons. Hallbjorn agreed to go along, but said that as time went on, they would regret this trip. They rode, 12 in all, to Hlidarendi. When they rode into the hayfield, Gunnar was outside, but he did not notice them until they had come all the way up to the house. He did not go inside. Otkel thundered out the summons at once. When the summons had been served, Scammell said, "Was that done correctly, farmer?" "You know the answer to that," said Gunnar, "but one day, Scammell, I will remind you of this visit and the advice you've been giving." "That won't harm us," said Scammell, "as long as your halberd isn't in the air." Gunnar was very angry and went inside and told Kolskegg. Kolskegg said, "It's too bad we weren't all outside. Their visit would have ended in full disgrace if we had been." "Everything in due course," said Gunnar. "This visit will not bring them any honor." Shortly after this, Gunnar went to Njal and told him. Njal said, "Don't let this trouble you, for it will bring you much honor before the thing is over. All of us will be there to support you with advice and force." Gunnar thanked him and rode home. Otkel rode to the thing together with his brothers and Scammell. Njal's Saga, Part 51. Gunnar and all the Sigfusins rode to the thing, as well as Njal and his sons. They all went along with Gunnar, and people were saying that no other group was as vigorous as theirs. One day, Gunnar went to the booth of the men from Dalir. Frut and Hoskuld were outside, and they gave Gunnar a warm greeting. Gunnar told them the whole story behind the lawsuit. "What advice does Njal give?" said Frut. Gunnar answered, "He asked me to come to you and say that he would be of one mind with you in this matter." "That must mean," said Frut, "that he wants me, as your relative by marriage, to come up with a plan, and I'll do that." "You must challenge Geezer the White to a duel if they don't grant you self-judgment, and Kolskegg must challenge Gear the Goaty. Men will be found to attack Otkel and his gang, and we already have a band of men so large that you'll be able to do as you wish." Gunnar went back to his booth and reported this to Njal. Ulf Auregoti found out about these plans and told them to Geezer. Geezer then said to Otkel, "Who gave you the idea of summoning Gunnar?" "Scammell told me that this was what you and Gear the Goaty advised," said Otkel. "Where is that foul creature who told this lie?" said Geezer. "He is lying sick in his booth," said Otkel. "May he never get up again," said Geezer. "And now we must all go to Gunnar and offer him self-judgment, though I don't know whether he'll be willing to accept it now. Many people spoke ill of Scammell, and he lay sick for the rest of the thing." Geezer and his companions went to Gunnar's booth. Their coming was noticed and reported to Gunnar inside. He and his men came out and positioned themselves. Geezer the White was out front. He spoke. "Our offer, Gunnar, is that you judge this case yourself." "It was not by your advice, then, that I was summoned?" said Gunnar. "I didn't advise that," said Geezer, "and neither did Gear." "Then you will be willing to offer convincing proof of that?" said Gunnar. "What do you require?" said Geezer. "That you swear an oath," said Gunnar. "I'm willing to do that," said Geezer, "if you accept self-judgment." "I made that offer some time ago," said Gunnar, "but it seems to me there's more to judge now." Njal spoke. "The self-judgment is not to be turned down. The more at stake, the more honor to be earned." Gunnar said, "I will do as my friends wish and judge the case, but I advise Otkel not to provoke me anymore." Hoskuld and Hrut were sent for, and they came. Geezer swore an oath, and also Gear the Goaty, and then Gunnar decided the award and consulted no one about it, and then he announced his terms. "My terms are," he said, "that I should pay the value of the storage shed and the food that was in it. For the slave Melkoth's doings I will pay nothing, because you hid his faults from me, and I return him to you, since ears belong best in the place where they grew. I also find that you summoned me with intent to disgrace, and for that I award myself nothing less than the value of the shed and the contents that were burned. If you now think it better for us to be without a settlement, I still offer you that choice, but in that case I have one more plan, and it will be carried out." Geezer said, "We are willing to have you pay nothing, but we ask that you be Otkel's friend." "That shall never be, as long as I live," said Gunnar, "but he can have Scammel's friendship. It's what he's been leaning on for a long time." Geezer answered, "We still want to settle the matter, even though you make all the terms yourself." All the terms of the settlement were then agreed on with handshakes. Gunnar said to Otkel, "It would be best for you to go and live with your kinsmen, but if you remain in this district, don't ever provoke me." Geezer said, "That's sound advice, and he'll follow it." Gunnar had much honor from the case. People then rode home from the thing. Gunnar stayed at home, and for a while everything was quiet. Part 52. There was a man named Runolf, the son of Ulf Auregodi. He lived at Dahl, to the east of the Markarfljot. He stayed with Otkel on his way back from the Althing. Otkel gave him a black ox, 9 years old. Runolf thanked him for the gift and invited him to his home, whenever he wished, but Otkel did not take him up on the invitation for some time. Runolf often sent men to him to remind him to come, and Otkel always promised to make the journey. Otkel had 2 dun-colored horses with a black stripe down the back. They were the best riding horses in the district, and so fond of each other that they always ran together. A new Norwegian named Audolf was staying with Otkel. He was in love with Otkel's daughter, Signy. Audolf was a big and strong man. Part 53. In the spring, Otkel announced that they would ride east to make the visit to Dahl, and everyone expressed pleasure at that. Scammel went along with Otkel, as did Otkel's 2 brothers, Audolf and 3 other men. Otkel rode one of the dun-colored horses, and the other ran loose at his side. They headed east toward the Markarfljot River, and Otkel galloped in front. Then the 2 horses got excited and ran away from the road, up towards Fljotshlid. Otkel was going faster than he wanted to. Gunnar had walked away from his house all alone, with a basket of seed in one hand and his hand axe in the other. He went to his field to sow grain and put his finely woven cloak and the axe on the ground and sowed for a while. To return to Otkel, who was going faster than he wanted to, he had spurs on his feet and came galloping over the field, and neither he nor Gunnar saw each other. Just as Gunnar stood up straight, Otkel rode at him, and his spur struck against Gunnar's ear and made a big gash, and blood flowed at once. Otkel's companions came riding up just then. "You can all see," said Gunnar, "that you, Otkel, have made me shed blood, and this is indecent behavior. First you summoned me, and now you knock me down and ride over me." Scammel spoke, "You're taking this well, but you were not at all calmer at the Althing when you were holding your halberd." Gunnar spoke, "The next time we meet, you'll see the halberd." At this they parted. Scammel shouted out, "Brave riding, fellows!" Gunnar went home and talked of this to no one, and nobody thought that the wound was a man's doing. One day, however, he told his brother Kolskegg. Kolskegg said, "You must report this to more people, so that it cannot be said that you bring charges against the dead. The matter will be disputed if no witnesses know what happened between you and Otkel." Gunnar told his neighbors, and not much was said about it at first. Otkel arrived at Dahl in the east, and they had a good welcome there and stayed for a week. Otkel told Runolf all about what happened between him and Gunnar. One of the men present asked how Gunnar had reacted. Scammel spoke, "If he were just an ordinary man, it would be said that he cried." "That was an evil thing to say," said Runolf, "and the next time you and Gunnar meet, you will have to admit that there is no trace of crying in his nature, and it would be a good thing if better men than you did not have to pay for your maliciousness. For now it seems best that I go along with you when you want to go home, for Gunnar will not harm me." "I don't want that," said Otkel, "but we'll cross the river further down." Runolf gave him good gifts and said that they would not meet again. Otkel asked him not to forget his son if that should prove true. Njal's Saga, Part 54. Now to return to Hlidarendi. Gunnar was outside and saw his shepherd galloping toward the house. The shepherd rode into the hayfield. Gunnar asked, "Why are you riding so fast?" "I wanted to prove my loyalty," he said. "I saw some men riding down along the Markarfljot, 8 of them altogether, and 4 were wearing colored clothing." Gunnar said, "It must be Otkel." "I have often heard much provocative language from them," said the shepherd. Scammel said over at Dahl that you cried when they wrote at you. I tell you this because I hate the things bad men say. Let's not be overcome by their words, said Gunnar, but from now on you must only do the work you want to do. Shall I tell your brother Kolskegg about this, said the shepherd? You go and sleep, said Gunnar. I'll tell Kolskegg. The boy went to bed and fell asleep at once. Gunnar took the shepherd's horse and put his saddle on it. He took his shield, girded himself with the sword he had received from Ovir, put on his helmet, and took his halberd. It rang loudly, and his mother Ranvig heard it. She came to him and spoke. You look angry, my son. I never saw you like this before. Gunnar went out and thrust the halberd into the ground to vault into the saddle, and rode away. Ranvig went into the main room. There was a great din of voices there. You are talking loudly, she said, but Gunnar's halberd was even louder when he went out. Kolskegg heard this and spoke. This means no small news. Good, said Hallgerd. Now they can find out whether Gunnar will go away from them crying. Kolskegg took his weapons and found himself a horse and rode after Gunnar as fast as he could. Gunnar rode across Akratunga and then to Gelastafnir, and from there to the Ranga River and down to the fort at Hof. There were some women out at the milking pen. Gunnar leaped from his horse and tied it. Then Otkol and his party came riding up. There were slabs of hard clay on the paths to the fort. Gunnar said to them, Now you must defend yourselves. My halberd is here. You'll find out now if I'll do any crying for you. They all leaped from their horses and charged at Gunnar. Hallbjorn was in the lead. Don't you attack me, said Gunnar. You're the last one I would want to harm. But I won't spare anyone if I have to defend myself. It cannot be helped, said Hallbjorn. You're planning to kill my brother, and I would be shamed if I just stood by. And with both hands he thrust a great spear at Gunnar. Gunnar brought his shield to meet the spear, and Hallbjorn's thrust went through it. Gunnar brought the shield down so hard that it stuck in the ground, and then he grabbed a sword so swiftly that no eye could follow and swung it and hit Hallbjorn on the arm above the wrist and cut it off. Scammel ran up behind Gunnar and swung a great axe at him. Gunnar turned quickly to face him and struck the underside of the blade with his halberd, and the axe flew out of his hand and out into the Ranga River. Gunnar thrust with the halberd a second time right through Scammel and lifted him up and threw him headfirst on the clay path. Aldolf seized his spear and threw it at Gunnar. Gunnar caught it in the air and threw it back, and it went through both the shield and the Norwegian and into the ground. Otkol swung his sword at Gunnar and tried to hit the leg below the knee. Gunnar leaped into the air and Otkol missed him. Gunnar then thrust right through him with his halberd. Kolskegg arrived then and rushed straight at Hallkel and dealt him a death blow with his short sword. Together they killed 8 men. A woman who saw this ran to the house and told Mord and asked him to separate them. It's just men who, for all I care, he said, can kill each other. You don't mean that, she said. Your kinsman Gunnar and your friend Otkol are there. You're always blabbing away, you foul wretch, he said, and lay inside while they were fighting. Gunnar and Kolskegg rode home after these deeds and rode swiftly along the river bank, and Gunnar sprang from his horse and landed on his feet. Kolskegg said, Brave riding, brother. Gunnar said, Scammel mocked me with those words when I said, You've ridden over me. You've had your vengeance for that, said Kolskegg. What I don't know, said Gunnar, is whether I am less manly than other men, because killing troubles me more than it does them. Part 55. The news spread far and wide, and many people said that it had not happened any sooner than was likely. Gunnar rode to Burg Thorsvoll and told Njal of these deeds. Njal spoke, It's a big thing you've done, but you've been greatly provoked. What will come next? Said Gunnar. Do you want me to tell you of something which has not yet happened? Said Njal. You will ride to the Thing and follow my advice and earn great honor from this matter. This will be the beginning of your career of killings. Give me your sound advice, said Gunnar. I will, said Njal. Never kill more than once within the same bloodline, and never break any settlement which good men make between you and others, least of all if you have broken my first warning. I would have expected other men to do these things sooner than me, said Gunnar. That's so, said Njal, and yet you must bear in mind that if these two things happen, you will not have long to live, but otherwise you will live to be an old man. Gunnar said, Do you know what will be the cause of your death? I do, said Njal. What? Said Gunnar. Something the people would least expect, said Njal. Then Gunnar rode home. A messenger was sent to Gisr the White and Gyr the Godi, since it was up to them to bring a suit for following the slaying of Otkol. They met to talk about what to do. They agreed that the case should be prosecuted by law. Then it was a question of who would undertake this, and neither of them was willing. It seems to me, said Gisr, that there are two possibilities. One of us must bring up the suit, and we decide this by lot, or else Otko will lie without compensation. We can expect that it will be hard to bring the suit. Gunnar is well off for kinsmen and for friends. Which of us does not draw the lot must ride along in support and not back out until the case has been concluded. Then they drew lots, and it was Gyr the Goaty who had to bring the suit. Shortly after this, they rode east over the rivers and came to where the encounter had taken place on the Ranga River. They dug up the bodies and named witnesses to the fatal wounds. Then they gave notice of their findings and summoned a panel of 9 neighbors. They were told that Gunnar was at home with 30 men. Gyr the Goaty asked Gizur whether he was willing to ride over there with 100 men. "I don't want to do that," he said, "even with such a great difference in numbers." Then they rode back home. News of the starting of the suit spread to all districts of Iceland, and the talk was that this would be a stormy thing. Njalsaga, part 56. There was a man named Skafti, the son of Thorod. Thorod's mother was Thorver. She was the daughter of Thormod Skafti, the son of Olif the Broad, the son of Olvil Child-Sparer. Skafti and his father were great chieftains and very expert in the law. Thorod was considered devious and cunning. They both supported Gizur the White in all matters. The men from Fljotslid and the men from the Ranga district assembled in great numbers for the thing. Gunnar was so well liked that they all agreed to stand by him. They arrived at the thing and put the coverings over their booths. In alliance with Gizur the White were these chieftains, Skafti and Thorod, Asgrim Elitegrimsson, Odd from Kidjaberg, and Haldor Ornolfsson. One day, men went to the Law Rock. Gyr the Goaty stood up and gave notice of a suit for homicide against Gunnar for the slaying of Atkul. He gave notice of a second suit for homicide against Gunnar for the slaying of Halbjorn the White, then another for the slaying of Audolf, and another for the slaying of Skamel. Then he gave notice of a suit for homicide against Kolskegg for the slaying of Halkul. When he had finished announcing all the suits, people said that he had spoken well. He asked about the district and the domicile of the defendants. Everybody then left the Law Rock. The thing went on until the day that the courts were to convene to hear the prosecution. Both sides gathered in large numbers. Gyr the Goaty and Gizur the White stood to the south of the Ranga court, Gunnar and Njal to the north. Gyr the Goaty requested that Gunnar listen to his oath, and then he swore it. After that, he presented the charges. Then he produced witnesses that the notice of the suit had been given. Then he had the neighbors take their seats on the panel. Then he invited his opponents to challenge the legitimacy of the panel, and then he asked the panel to announce its findings. The neighbors who had been named went before the court and named witnesses and barred themselves from reaching a decision about Audolf, since the man who should prosecute was in Norway and it was not for them to deal with the case. After that, they gave their decision in the case of Otkul and declared that Gunnar was truly guilty of the charge. After that, Gyr the Goaty invited Gunnar to try to defend himself and named witnesses for each of the steps taken in the prosecution. Gunnar, in his turn, requested that Gyr the Goaty listen to his oath and to the defense which he would present to the case. Then he swore his oath. He spoke, "The defense which I present in this case is that I named witnesses and in the presence of the neighbors declared Otkul an outlaw on account of the bloody wound which he inflicted on me with his spur. I forbid you by law, Gyr the Goaty, to prosecute this case and the judges to judge it, and I hereby declare the initiation of your suit invalid. I forbid you, according to lawful, incontestable, absolute, and binding right of prohibition, as I am entitled by the rules of the Althing and common law. I also want to tell you of another procedure I have in mind." "Are you," said Gyr, "going to challenge me to a duel, as is your custom, and disregard the laws?" "Not that," said Gunnar, "but I will charge you at the Law Rock for calling a panel to sit on the case of Audolf when it was not for them to deal with the case, and for this I hold you deserving of outlawry for 3 years." Njal spoke, "You can't go on like this, for it will only lead to a hard-fought dispute. There are strong arguments, it seems to me, on both sides of the case. There are some slayings, Gunnar, for which you cannot ward off being found guilty. At the same time, you have brought a suit against Gyr by which he will be found guilty. And you, Gyr the Goaty, must understand that there is a charge of full outlawry against you which has not yet been brought, and it will be brought if you don't do as I say." Thorod the Goaty spoke, "It seems to Skafti and me that the peaceful thing to do is to make a settlement between yourselves. But why do you have so little to say, Gizur the White?" "It seems to me," said Gizur, "that some mighty obstacles block our suit, for it's clear that Gunnar's friends are standing by him, and the best thing for our side would be for good men to arbitrate a settlement, if Gunnar so wills."
"I have always been glad to settle peacefully," said Gunnar. "You have much to seek redress for, but I still think I have been pushed hard." By the advice of the wisest men, it was concluded that the case should be settled by arbitration. 6 men were to arbitrate the case. It was to be done at once, at the thing. The decision was that Scammel should lie without compensation, that the amounts for Otkol's death and the spur wound were to cancel each other out, and that the other slayings were to be paid according to each man's worth. Gunnar's kinsmen contributed enough money so that all the slayings were paid for at once at the thing. Gyr the Godi and Gizr the White then made pledges of peace to Gunnar. Gunnar rode home from the thing. He thanked men for their support and gave gifts to many and earned much honor from this. Then he remained honorably at home. Part 57. There was a man named Starkad. He was the son of Bork Blacktoothbeard, the son of Thorkel Boundleg, who settled the area around the mountain Thrherning. Starkad was a married man, and his wife's name was Halbera. She was the daughter of Hrold the Red and of Hildegund, the daughter of Thorstein Sparrow. Hildegund's mother was Un, the daughter of Eivind Karfi and the sister of Modolf the Wise, from whom the Modulfing clan are descended. The sons of Starkad and Halbera were Thorgeir, Bork, and Thorkel. Their sister was Hildegund the Healer. The brothers were very prone to violence, mean-spirited, and overbearing. They had no respect for the rights of others. Njal's Saga, Part 58. There was a man named Egil. He was the son of Kol, the son of Ottar Bol, who settled the area between Stotalake and Reitarvatn. Egil's brother was Onund of Trollaskog, the father of Hali the Strong, who was at the slaying of Holta Thorir together with the sons of Ketil the Smooth Talker. Egil lived at Sandgil. His sons were Kol and Otter and Hawk. Their mother was Steinvor, Starkad's sister. Egil's sons were big and aggressive men and the worst troublemakers. They always took sides with the sons of Starkad. Their sister was Gudrun Knight's son, a very well-mannered woman. Egil had taken in 2 Norwegians, one named Thorir and the other Thorgrim. They were on their first trip out to Iceland and were well-liked and wealthy. They were good fighters and brave in every way. Starkad had a good stallion, reddish in color, and he and his sons thought that no other horse could match it in a fight. One day it happened that the brothers from Sandgil were over near Thrherning. They had a great chat about all the farmers in Fljotslid and eventually discussed whether any of them would fight his horse against theirs. Some men, to praise and flatter them, said that no one dared to fight his horse against theirs, and in fact no one even owned such a horse. Then Hildegund answered, "I know a man who would dare to fight his horse against yours." "Name him," they said. She said, "Gunnar of Hlidarendi has a brown stallion, and he will dare to fight it against your horses or anyone else." "You women always think that no one is a match for Gunnar," said the men, "but just because Gyr the Godi and Gizr the White came off so poorly against him, it doesn't mean that we will too." "It will be much worse for you," she said, and they got into a great quarrel over this. Starkad said, "Gunnar is the last man I'd want you to go after, because it would be hard for you to counter his good luck." "But you will let us challenge him to a fight, a horse fight," they said. "I will," he said, "as long as you don't play any tricks on him." They said they would not. Then they rode to Hlidarendi. Gunnar was at home and came outside. Kolskegg came out too, along with their brother Hjort, and they greeted them warmly and asked where they were headed. "No farther than here," they said. "We've been told that you have a good stallion, and we'd like to offer you a horse fight." Gunnar answered, "There can't be many stories told about my stallion. He's young and totally untested." "But you will give him a chance to fight, won't you?" they said. "Hildegund mentioned that you were quite proud of your horse." "How did you happen to be speaking about that?" said Gunnar. "There were men," they said, "who were saying that no one would dare fight his horse against ours." "I would dare," said Gunnar, "but that seems to me a mean-spirited thing to say." "Can we count on the fight, then?" they said. "You'll think your trip was worth making," said Gunnar, "if you have your way, but I want to request this, that we fight our horses to provide pleasure for others and not trouble for ourselves, and that you don't try to shame me. If you do to me as you do to others, my only course will be to turn against you in a way that you'll find hard to take. I'll do the same to you as you do to me." They rode back home, and Starkad asked them how it had gone. They said that Gunnar had made their trip a good one. He promised to let his horse fight, and we decided when the fight was to take place. But it was clear from everything that he felt inferior to us and that he was trying to get out of it. "It's often the case with Gunnar," said Hildegund, "that he's slow to be drawn into quarrels, but hard to tame if he can't get out of them." Gunnar rode over to Signal and told him about the horse fight and the words that had passed between them. "And how do you think the horse fight will turn out?" You will have the upper hand, said Njal, but the death of many men will come from it.
Will my death perhaps come from this, said Gunnar?
Not from this, said Njal, but they will remember their old hostility with you and add a new one, and you will have no choice but to fight back. Then Gunnar rode home. Part 59. There Gunnar learned of the death of his father-in-law, Hoskuld. A few days later, Thorgerd at Grjota, the wife of Thrain, gave birth to a boy. She sent a man to her mother and asked her to choose whether the boy should be named Glum or Hoskuld. Hallgerd asked that he be named Hoskuld, and that was the name given to the boy. Gunnar and Hallgerd had two sons. One was called Hogni and the other Grani. Hogni was an able man, quiet, not easily persuaded, and truthful. Men rode to the horse fight and came in great numbers. Gunnar was there, and his brothers and the Sigfusins and Njal and his sons. Starkad and his sons and Egil and his sons also came. They told Gunnar that they should bring on the horses. Gunnar said that they should. Skarphedin said, "Do you want me to prod your horse, Gunnar, my friend?" "No, I don't," said Gunnar. "But it would be better if I did," said Skarphedin. "I'm the violent sort, like them." "You wouldn't have to say or do much," said Gunnar, "before trouble arose, but this way it will come more slowly, even though it turns out the same." The horses were then brought on. Gunnar was prepared for the prodding, and Skarphedin brought up his horse. Gunnar was wearing a red tunic and a wide silver belt. He was holding a stick in his hand. The horses went to it and bit at each other for a long time so that there was no need to touch them, and it was great sport. Then Thorgeir and Kol made a plan that the next time the horses went at each other, they would give their horse a push and see if this would knock Gunnar down. The horses went to it, and Thorgeir and Kol shoved their horse from behind. Gunnar pushed back with his, and in no time at all, Thorgeir and Kol were flat on the ground with their horse on top of them. They sprang up and rushed at Gunnar. Gunnar jumped to the side and grabbed Kol and threw him on the ground so hard that he lay senseless. Thorgeir Starkaddarson struck such a blow at Gunnar's horse that its eye fell out. Gunnar hit Thorgeir with his stick. He too fell senseless. Gunnar went over to his horse and said to Kolskegg, "Kill this horse. He must not live maimed." Kolskegg killed the horse. Then Thorgeir got to his feet and took his weapons and wanted to rush at Gunnar, but a great crowd came up and he was stopped. Skarphedin spoke, "I'm getting tired of this jostling. It's much more manly when men fight with weapons." Gunnar stood so calmly that one man was enough to hold him, and he said nothing that was improper. Njal tried to make a settlement or a truce, but Thorgeir said he would neither give nor receive any pledges of peace, and that he would prefer to see Gunnar dead because of the blow he struck. Kolskegg spoke, "Gunnar has always stood too firm to be felled by mere words, and so it is now." Men rode away from the horse fight then, each to his home. Nobody made an attack on Gunnar, and things stayed this way during the winter. At the Thing the following summer, Gunnar met his brother-in-law Olaf Peacock, and Olaf invited him home, but warned him to be on his guard, because they will do us whatever harm they can, so always travel in large numbers. Olaf gave him much sound advice, and they declared great friendship for each other. Njal's Saga, Part 60. Asgrim Elita Grimson had a case to prosecute at the Althing. It was an inheritance case. The defendant was Ulf Uggason. Asgrim was doing well until, and this was unusual, there was a flaw in his case. The flaw was that he had named 5 neighbors to the panel when he should have named 9, and the other side made this their defense. Gunnar spoke, "I challenge you to a duel, Ulf Uggason, if people cannot get their rights from you. Njal and my friend Helgi would expect me to take part in your defense, Asgrim, if they could not be here themselves." "This is not a quarrel between you and me," said Ulf. "It comes to the same thing," said Gunnar. The outcome was that Ulf had to pay over the full amount. Asgrim then said to Gunnar, "I invite you to my home this summer, and I shall always take your side in lawsuits and never be against you." Gunnar rode home from the Thing. Shortly after he met with Njal, Njal asked him to be on his guard and said that he had been told that men up at Thrihyrning were planning to attack him, and he asked Gunnar never to travel in small numbers and always to have his weapons handy. Gunnar said he would do so. He said that Asgrim had invited him for a visit, and I plan to go there in the autumn. "Let no one know beforehand that you're going," said Njal, "or how long you will be away. In any case, I'll have my sons ride with you, and then you won't be attacked." They came to an understanding on this. The summer went on until it was 8 weeks before winter. Gunnar said to Kolskegg, "Get ready for a trip. We're going to ride to Tunga for a visit." "Shouldn't you send word to Njal's sons?" said Kolskegg. "No," said Gunnar, "they must not get into trouble because of me." Part 61. The three of them, Gunnar, Kolskegg, and Hjort, rode together. Gunnar had his halberd and sword that Olvir had given him, and Kolskegg had his short sword. Hjort was also fully armed. They rode to Tunga. Asgrim welcomed them, and they stayed there for some time. After that, they made it known that they planned to go home. Asgrim gave them good gifts and offered to ride east with them. Gunnar said that this was not needed, and so Asgrim did not go along. There was a man named Sigurd Swinehead. His home was at Thjorsa, and he had promised to spy on Gunnar's movements. Now he came to Thrihyrning and told them about Gunnar's return, and said that there would be no better time than this, since Gunnar was only with two others. How many will we need for an ambush? Said Starkad. Ordinary men will be weak facing him, he said. It's not wise to have fewer than 30 men. Starkad said, Where shall we ambush him? At Nafahalar, said Sigurd. There he won't see us until he arrives. Go to Sandgil, said Starkad, and tell Egil to get 15 men ready from there, and we'll head for Nafahalar with another 15. Thorgeir spoke to Hildegun. Tonight this hand will bring you evidence of Gunnar's death. My guess, she said, is that you will be carrying both head and hand low when you come from this encounter. Starkad and his three sons left the Herning alone with 11 others. They went to Nafahalar and waited there. Sigurd came to Sandgil and said, I've been sent here by Starkad and his sons to say that you, Egil, and your sons should go to Nafahalar to lie in wait for Gunnar. How many of us should go? Asked Egil. 15, counting me, he said. Kol spoke, Today I'll try myself against Kolskegg. I would say you're taking on a lot, said Sigurd. Egil asked his Norwegian guests to come along. They said they had no quarrel with Gunnar. And you must need a lot of help, said Thorir, if it takes such a horde to attack three men. Egil left in anger. His wife said to Thorir, My daughter Gudrun was wrong to put aside her pride and sleep with you. If you don't dare go along with your father-in-law, you're just a coward. I'll go with your husband, he said, but neither of us will come back. He went to his companion Thorgrim and said, Take the keys to my chest, since I won't be unlocking them anymore. I want you to take as much of our property as you wish and leave Iceland, and don't think of avenging me. If you don't leave, it will be your death. Thorir gathered his weapons and took his place in their band. Part 62. Now to return to Gunnar. He rode east across the Thrjosa River, and when he was only a short way beyond the river, he became very sleepy. He asked his companions to stop, and they did so. He fell into a deep sleep, but slept restlessly. Kolskegg said, Gunnar is having a dream. Hjort said, I'd like to wake him. Don't do that, said Kolskegg. Let him finish his dream. Gunnar lay there for a long time and threw off his cloak, and he was very warm. Kolskegg said, What were you dreaming, brother? I dreamed something, said Gunnar, that would have kept me from leaving Tunga with so few men if I had dreamed it there. Kolskegg said, Tell us the dream. I dreamed, said Gunnar, that I was riding past Nafahalar. There I saw many wolves, and they attacked me, but I got away and down to the Ranga River. There they attacked again, from all sides, and we defended ourselves. I shot at those who were in front until they came too close for me to use my bow. So I drew my sword and swung it with one hand, and with the other hand I thrust with my halberd. I didn't shield myself, and I didn't know what was shielding me. I killed many wolves, and you were by my side, Kolskegg, but they trampled Hjort down and tore open his chest, and one wolf had his heart in his mouth. I was so angry that I sliced the wolf in two just behind the shoulder. And after that, the wolves fled. Now, brother Hjort, it's my advice that you ride back west to Tunga. That I won't do, said Hjort. Though I know my death to be certain, I will stay with you. They rode on east and came to Nafahalar. Kolskegg said, Do you see all those spears coming up behind the hills, Gunnar and men with weapons? It's no surprise to me, said Gunnar, that my dream is coming true. What are we to do now? Said Kolskegg. I guess you don't want to run away from them. They won't be able to taunt us with that, said Gunnar. Let's ride down to that point of land by the Ranga River. There's a place to defend ourselves. They rode down to the point and prepared to fight. When they rode past, Kol said, Are you going to run away, Gunnar? Kolskegg answered, Ask that when this day is done. Njal's Saga, Part 63. Starkad then urged his men on. They headed toward those who were on the point of land. Sigurd Swinehead was out in front and was holding a small round shield and a hunting spear in the other hand. Gunnar saw him and shot at him with his bow. Sigurd raised his shield when he saw the arrow flying high, but it went through the shield and into his eye and out the back of his neck. That was the first slaying. Gunnar shot another arrow at Ulf Hedin, Starkhead's overseer, and it struck him in the waist and he fell down at the feet of a farmer, and the farmer tripped over him. Kolskegg threw a stone and it hit the head of the farmer, and that was his death. Then Starkhead said, "We won't get anywhere as long as Gunnar has the use of his bow, so let's make a good and swift charge." They all urged each other on. Gunnar defended himself with bow and arrows as long as he could. Then he threw them down, took his halberd and sword, and fought with both hands. The battle was fierce for a long time. Gunnar and Kolskegg killed many men. Then Thorgeir Starkaddarson said, "I vowed to bring Hildegund your head, Gunnar." "She can't have set much store by that," said Gunnar, "but still, you'll have to come closer." Thorgeir said to his brothers, "Let's all charge him together. He has no shield, and we'll have his life in our hands." Bork and Thorkel ran forward and were quicker than Thorgeir. Bork took a swing at Gunnar. Gunnar struck back so hard with his halberd that the sword flew out of Bork's hand. Then he saw Thorkel on his other side within striking distance. Gunnar had pulled back a little. He made a sweep with his sword and hit Thorkel on the neck, and the head flew off. Cole Egilson said, "Let me have a go at Kolskegg. I've been saying for a long time that we two would be a fair match." "Now is our time to find out," said Kolskegg. Cole thrust his spear at him. Kolskegg had just slain a man, and he had his hands full, and so could not get his shield up, and the spear hit him on the outside of his thigh and went through it. Kolskegg moved quickly and stepped towards him and struck him on the thigh with his short sword and cut off the leg and spoke. "Did that hit you or not?" "This is what I get," said Cole, "for not shielding myself." And he stood for a while on his leg and looked at the stump. Kolskegg spoke. "You don't need to look. It's just as you think. The leg is gone." Then Cole fell down dead. When Egil saw that, he rushed at Gunnar and swung at him. Gunnar lunged with his halberd and it went into his waist. He lifted him up on the halberd and flung him out into the Ranga. Then Starkhead said, "You're quite useless, Thorir the Norwegian, if you don't take part. Egil, your host and father-in-law, has been slain." Thorir sprang to his feet and was very angry. Hjort had caused the death of two men. The Norwegian charged at him and hacked at his chest. Hjort fell down dead at once. Gunnar saw this and threw himself at the Norwegian with a hacking blow and cut him in two at the waist. Shortly after that, he lunged at Bork with his halberd. It went into his waist and threw him and into the ground. Kolskegg then cut off the head of Hauk Egilson, and Gunnar cut off the arm of Odar Egilson at the elbow. Then Starkhead said, "Let's flee. These aren't men we're dealing with." Gunnar spoke, "Telling stories about this won't be easy unless there's something on you to show that you've been in battle." Then he charged at Starkhead and his son Thorgeir and gave them both bloody wounds. After that, they parted, and Gunnar and his brothers had wounded many of those who got away. In this battle, 14 men died, and Hjort was the 15th. Gunnar rode home with Hjort laid out on his shield, and he was buried in a mound there. Many people mourned his loss, for he had been well-liked. Starkhead and Thorgeir came home, and Hildegund treated their wounds and said, "You would give a great deal now not to have got on Gunnar's bad side." "We certainly would," said Starkhead.